Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
All right. So today, talk about a very strange design called a hierarchical analysis of variance. Usually all our factors, that's our variables, are crossed. They're in sorry, variance with each other. In other words, we get every level of A. Well, look at the one just from the quiz. Every level of A occurs with every level of B. That always happens. We don't end up, except for subjects. I'm not talking about subjects here. Subjects get different levels of A and B, but the independent variables are always crossed. So I'm going to say here, each level of A occurs with each level of B, something like that. Okay. And like I said, I'm not talking about the subjects. The subjects do, in this case, from the quiz, get different levels of A and B, different combinations of A and B. So subjects are nested. But we don't have any nesting of variables. Right? Until now. This is an actual design of a study that a friend of mine analyzed the data for. It was a drug study. This is something that you often do if you're at a big university or grad school, you're a psychology graduate student, any good at statistics, you can kind of hire yourself out to other people because nobody has the stats training we do except statisticians. So you'll have people doing things in medical schools and not doing research, and they often need help. So you can make, you can charge them $100 an hour because you've got a skill they don't have. So I remember doing this a couple of times. My friend Todd, who's now a prof at Dartmouth in the States, he analyzed these data for this drug study in Toronto. There were three hospitals, Hospital 1, Hospital 2, Hospital 3, and six drugs. These are analgesics. These are pain medication. Okay? And then there's, of course, different subjects get different drugs. Okay? And in this case, because of limitations, a couple of limitations, one of them that there wasn't the money to test all six drugs in all three hospitals. Couldn't do it. They're also, happily, because these are burn survivors, there weren't enough people that were really badly burned to have enough subjects to do that anyway. So it's kind of a happy problem in a way. It's a bad problem statistically, but it's a happy problem for, humans. So, got a couple limitations here. The thing is, you've got to realize that different hospitals are going to have, they're going to affect the patient's outcomes differently because you have different staffs. You have different nurses, different MDs. You've got different, just the rooms are different. I mean, there's so many possible things that could affect your recovery and affect your experience of pain that you want to include hospital as a source of variation because it clearly is one. But you don't have the luxury of crossing hospitals with drugs. You can't test all six drugs in all three hospitals. It just can't be done. It's impractical, and frankly, in this case, it was impossible. It was impractical money-wise and impossible because there weren't enough subjects, not enough participants, not enough burn survivors. Okay. There were five burn survivors per group, so each hospital had 10 people that were chosen. These are people that were really badly burned in the fires, obviously. And so you have 10 people per hospital. So hospital 1 gets drug 1, subjects 1 to 5, subjects 6 to 10 get drug 2. Okay? All right. So you understand the design? It's a strange-looking design. You got to realize that. Like, I understand that drugs nested within hospital is weird. Why do we even want to include hospital? Well, we want to remove the variation due to that to make the error term smaller, and we do know that each hospital is different enough that we want to have that in there. Right? Okay. So, things are a little bit different than we were used to. So, hospital has, there's three hospitals, H minus one, two. 2 degrees of freedom. Drugs are nested within hospital. D minus 1 times H. Now, within each hospital, there are two drugs. So 2 minus 1 is 1 times 3 hospitals is 3 degrees of freedom. Okay. And then we have subjects by drugs. Subjects within drug by hospital. It's not subjects within drugs within hospital. Just to keep that clear. So how we calculate this, this is n minus 1 times d times h. N minus 1, so that's 5, minus 1 is 4, right, times 2. And yes, I know there are 6 total drugs, but within each hospital there are only 2 drugs. Times 2 times 3. So that's 4 times 2 is 8 times 3 is 24. And then you look, you go 2 and 3 is 5, and 24, 29, 30 subjects. I did it properly. Now, what do we test? How do we figure out the error terms? You've got to look. It's the same. It's all Yates order. It works the same. We look below, and we find out the one that has the thing we're interested in and subjects. So both of these, both hospital and drugs within hospital, are tested with subjects by drugs within hospital. They're both tested with that. Okay? So you do the analysis of variance to see if there's a hospital effect or a drug within hospital effect. We test both of those with the mean squared for subjects by drugs within hospital. So you might look at this and say, that's so unwieldy. It's hard to even fathom when you use this. Well, like I said, there are special cases when you would do this kind of thing. And those special cases are like this, when it's you have no choice. There's a lot of real problems with this, and we'll talk about it in a second. But you have to realize that if you're doing especially things like field stuff or clinical trials, those kind of things, this does come up. This does come up. Now, Todd could have, when he analyzed these data for these people, he could have said, no, just do 6 drugs. Simple one-way ANOVA. Except what would have happened? All the variants through the hospitals would have gone into mean squared error, because this is the only place it could go. And it would have made it so big, perhaps, that you don't find an effect. And think about what you're trying to do here. You're trying to find out if you've got a drug that helps burn survivors recover better. That's pretty important, right? So you want to make sure you make the right conclusion. In this case, unfortunately, the limitation is we can't test every drug in each hospital. Right. So there's going to be cases where you'd use this. Okay, here's another example. We'll use n equals 3. The way that came on. Okay, what do we got? We've got, this is a little more complicated. The last one was they were between subjects variables, right? Because different subjects got different hospitals and different subjects got different drugs. In this case, we got a within there. And we got nesting. So, right, when something's nested within something else. So this is a little more complicated. So, the between subjects factors, what are they? Take a look. What do you see? There's only A, B, and C. What's your between? The ones, in other words, which the different subjects get different levels of? Yeah, go ahead.
B and C.
B and C. Not C. Every subject gets every level of C. Everybody gets C1, everybody gets C2. But different subjects get different levels of B. Right? Let's take a look. Group 1 gets B1, group 2 gets B2, group 3 gets B3, and group 4 gets B4. And A, groups 1 and 2 get A1, and groups 3 and 4 get A2. So those are the betweens. A and B are between, C's within. So the sort of final rule of Yates order, remember between, subjects within, is if you've got a hierarchical design like this, start at the top of the hierarchy. So you wouldn't start with, well, I'll show you the example of how you do this in a sec. So we have nesting as well as within subjects variables. So Yates order, it's your friend. Order is, just so there's a space there. Yates order is, not Yates order is. It sounds like it could be like a name of a Latvian hockey player. Orderish, you would pronounce his name like that. His name would be Nats with three A's and two T's all in a row. I guess for Colorado or something. The person getting that any of those is good. You. Me and Adam are laughing about Latvian hockey player names.
I'm laughing too.
You laugh so but like Dagovanch, that guy plays for. Because for the longest time, I thought it was a French name. It looks like it. I thought his name was Dagovay.
Yeah.
And then you look at it, and go, no, I think that's his first name is like
Kaspers.
Yeah, it's Kaspers. That's right. Yeah. Maybe you know this. Is plural? It seems like it's pluralizing the name with the S. Mm-hmm. Is it or not?
Okay.
Don't speak Latvian. No. Latvian extract. Like my name is Swiss. Like I know anything. Like I know anything about Mark Streit.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Kaspers Dagovanch. It's a great name, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great name. Anyway, back to... I love hockey so much. Right? Any chance, just even to talk. And Latvian hockey... If you ever watch the World Championships this year, the Latvian fans are the most fun to watch. Because they're just... They're crazy. They don't care they're losing 9-0. They're just... It's having fun. And I got a lot of respect for that.
Just happy to be there.
They're happy to be there. I got a lot of respect for that. I really seriously do. Okay. This is how this works. We're going to start with the top of the hierarchy. That's A. So, that's easy because it had two levels, A minus one. Now we do B within A. B minus one times A. It's going to have 2 degrees of freedom.
Why are we doing B within A on this example? Last week we did an example where there was 2 between-subjects variables and we just did...
Because they're crossed. Take a look. If you look at it, B is nested within A. Different levels of B occur with different levels of A. The one we did last week, all levels... Or even the one we just did from the quiz, all levels of B occur with all levels of A. Right? Good question. So if we take a look here at the one from the quiz, all B1 occurs with all levels of A, B2 occurs with all levels of A, B3 occurs with all levels of A. In this current example, B1 and 2 occur with A1, and B3 and 4 occur with A2.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, and I know it can be subtle. You have to look at it very closely and say to yourself, do all levels of this variable occur with all levels of another variable? Because if they don't, then it's nested, right? Now, fine question. Now, subjects within AB. You say, well, wait a second, why is it within AB? Again, you don't do subjects within B within A. It doesn't work that way. So, N minus 1... times A times B. So 4 times 2, or sorry, 2 times 2 times 2. Okay, can you cross? Remember, you always go like this, list this. You can't go B within A by A. So next thing you do is C. C minus 1, that's easy. Then you go C, C by A, C by B within A, C by S within AB. Add up those degrees of freedom. 1 and 2 is 3 and 8 is 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 23, and there are 24 observations. Thank you. You did it right. And what do we test with what? If we're going to do the analysis of variance, we just take a look. A and B within A, we're going to test by that error term S within AB. And then C by A, C by B within A. We're going to test all of those with the error term C by S within AB. Okay. There will be at least 3 of these in the final exam. Just to let you know. So this is something you... The fun thing about these is, it's mechanical. And once you learn how to do it, it's just like a... It's you could... You probably could. I couldn't, but my friend Rob could train a rhesus monkey to do this. He's got a lab with monkeys. Runs the European Primate Center. So I'm sure he could get some monkeys. Maybe I'll do that for my sabbatical. Hey, Rob, let's trade monkeys to mediate. So I don't see there's a paper in there anywhere, but it's kind of fun. Students would say, I can't do this. Really? Well, Skippy the monkey can. Let's show him. Here you go. Here you go, Skip. Comes in. He's throwing poop at you. He's doing the gate's order. And he just runs out into the hall, scratches people, starts a worldwide sort of, you know, infection of some sort. Well, it's probably a bad idea. Rob's monkeys are not scary monkeys that will start worldwide pandemics. I'm just letting you know. Perfectly cool monkeys. By the way, I just had a curious, as another aside, I saw this guy from France giving a talk, and he talked about his baboons that he was testing. And you think, like, a lot of trials, 60,000. I was watching these animals do this thing, and I said, that's got that fast. And my friend Rob said, yeah, if you train your animals doing 60,000 trials, they'd be fast. It's pretty impressive. Danny, you look like you have a question. Probably not about monkeys or baboons.
No, mine's just got to figure it out, I guess.
No. My job is to teach you.
I'm just trying to figure out how you got the CB kind
of. Oh, the reason for your part?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the nice thing is, look at B within A. Look at that first.
Okay.
There are two levels. Within each level of A, there are two levels. So that's 2 times 1, which is, you know, 1. Times A is 2. So now all we're going to do is take that same thing and multiply it times how many levels of C we have. C minus 1. We have 2 levels of C minus 1 is 1. So it's just going to be 1 times 1 times 2, which is 2.
But isn't there 4 levels of B?
No, there are 2. Yes, there are. But there are 2 levels of B with each level of A.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. You always have to look at just the same thing you do with this. This is where it's funny. This is where it's confusing. And believe me, when I learned this, it was confusing.
So why would
we
look at B1 and B2 as just 1, and then B3 and B4 as another?
Think of it this way. The levels of B, when they're looking up, okay, they can only look up and see where A is. They can't look beside them. They don't know what's in the next cell. They only know what's in their place of hierarchy within A1. So according to the Bs, if you were to ask each B, how many Bs are there? They'd say 2. There's me and this guy. 1 and 2. Over here, the guy'd say me and this guy is 3 and 4. But they both agreed there was only 2 levels of B. Yeah. Same thing with subjects, right? And that's why when you do with subjects, it seems people have a little less problem. And I think it's because you sort of think of it that way, where within each cell, we know when I say N equals 5, and there's 10 cells maybe, we know there are 50 subjects. But within each cell, you go, N equals 5. Same sort of idea there. And remember, subjects are often nested. Okay. Now, that's where the confusion comes in. Don't feel bad. You should actually be able to go the other way. You should have been able to do that on the quiz. So let's talk about this. We've got B, S within B, A, B by A by S within A, B. Okay, we got 2 degrees of freedom. B. Well, how do we do this? What's the between factor?
B.
Gotta be B because it's listed first. Exactly. Do we have any nesting of variables besides subjects? Happily no, so that makes this one kind of easy. Do we have a within factor? Yeah, because we've got A after S within B. How many levels of A do we have? We know they're crossed, A by B. They're right here. There's no nesting of A and B because we have an A by B interaction. How many levels of A and B do we have?
3.
3 of each. Conveniently, I have that right here. So there's 3 of those. Erase the B's. Now all we have to do is figure out the subjects. So subjects are nested within B. What's that mean? Put that in different words.
Then they all get a different level of B?
Yep. Group 1. But they all get the same. But if you look, A is repeated. That means because it's between subjects within. So that means everybody gets every level of A. Looks like that. Right? Within B1, we've got all the group 1. Within B2, we've got group 2. Within B3, we got within B3, we've got group 3. But everybody gets A1, everybody gets A2, everybody gets A3. How many subjects per group?
Four.
Yep, because there are 9 cells, 36 observations. Well, 36 divided by 4 is 9. For those of you that still know how to do division in your head, right? You should know how to do that. That one isn't that hard. 36 divided by 4 is 9. Yeah, there's some stuff to remember about these things. And just in general. Using Yates' order, we can figure out any design of error terms. We always can. It will always work. It's a beautiful thing. Here's a problem. This hospital, going back to the original example, is that a fixed factor or a random factor? Well, I don't know. I really don't know. I think I could make a case either way, and I think it would be safer to say it's a random factor. Yeah, it's probably safer to say it's a random factor. We want to be able to generalize all hospitals. And we kind of chose hospitals, or they did, in the same kind of way we choose subjects. They were available. So it makes it harder to test to with that design, the error term still would have been subjects within drug by hospital interactions, it would have been fine. If the design was more complicated, you'd have to get out a really complicated graduate level stats book to figure out the expected values of the mean squares and figure out what your error terms were. And that's a pain. If you got like a random factor and a fixed factor or something like that, and you had like the second example I had there, if one of those was random, the Yates order falls apart. That's not good. It's not good. So, as I sit here, I would avoid these designs like the plague. Because they're really hard to interpret. They're hard to interpret. All right. So that's that. Questions about that? What else here? What's the next one? Not square, right? Too quick, Mr. Today. Let us speak of Latin squares. I don't know why I said it like that. I just kind of felt like doing that. So, okay. We discussed the procedure for dealing with the nuisance variable. What is it? It's blocking. Right? Tremendous. We did repeated measures, which is also a special case of blocking, really. You're just, each subject is a block. They're using this per people as their own controls. But it really is a special case of a nuisance variable. That's all repeated measures really are. You can also, this is something, and I'm not going to explain this to you, I'm not going to teach this to you, you can wait until you're in graduate school if you want to learn about this. There is something called analysis of covariance, and COBA. And what it does is it statistically removes, if you can't block on something, let's say we thought maybe IQ was a really important variable, and it would add a lot of variance, we want to remove it, but we can't make blocks of people's IQs. We could statistically remove the variance due to IQ. It's done using regression, which we will talk about. There's nothing wrong with ANCOVA. It just is theoretically... it's beyond the scope of this course. That's what I'm going to say. So you might learn about it someday. You'd rather typically do something where you really can get the variable itself and see if it's significant, something like that. You know, see how much variance you took out. A little harder to do with ANCOVA. Okay, what if you had two nuisance variables? So now you've got two nuisance variables and a third variable because you have to have an independent variable.
Wow.
Are you going to cross them, right? Are you going to make a completely randomized design, as they call it, where you could have... So let's say you have three levels of the independent variable and three levels of one, of nuisance variable one and three levels of nuisance variable two. You're going to have to find subjects that fit all of those... You know, okay, are you level one on this nuisance variable and level two on this nuisance variable? That's going to be hard to find people. That's a hard thing to design. You can do it, but it'd be hard to do.
Can you give an example?
Well, like, if you had, think about our French learning example, right? So one of the, so we had three ways of learning French, and one of, that was our independent variable we were interested in. Now, let's say we have, we talked about how prior experience would be valuable, so we've got people that have, that are naive to French. We have people that have learned, that are that maybe have done French immersion, and then we have people that are completely bilingual. Those would clearly be nice blocks we could use. Now, let's see if we can think of another variable, and it might be, what's another variable that could affect language learning? Let's go with IQ, why not? Right, intelligence, just general intelligence, nothing wrong with that. So now we're going to have a group that has, one is going to be people that are 90 to 100 IQ, people that are 100 to 110, and people that are 110 to 120. Think of how hard this is going to start to get. Now we need to find people that are naive to that language and have an IQ between 90 and 100. Then we need another person that's naive to the language and has an IQ between 100 and 110. Now we have to find another person who's naive to the language, has an IQ of 110 to 120. Now do it again for people that are bilingual and do it again for people that did French immersion. That's going to be a royal pain. And in fact, it might even be come to the point where it's almost impossible to get the subjects.
Yeah,
yeah, and all the pre-testing you'd have to do. It'd be crazy. Wow. Hey, you do it. I'm not saying you couldn't do it. People do stuff like that. It's just very hard. It's very hard. And you're not that interested in the blocks anyway. They're nuisance variables. They're nuisance. They're in the way. They're like, get out of my way. It's like having a rock in your shoe. So I had my whole walk up here up to the bus stop from my house. There's a rock, and you know, it's snowy out. I'm not taking my shoe off. Because if I'm standing like this, it's coming in, it'll be bad. So wait till I get the bus. Just saying. That was a nuisance variable. It was a rock. Nuisance is annoying, right? You don't care. You know that's going to affect the learning of the language. You don't. That's not your experiments about, but you know it's important.
So you can ignore those?
You ignore them. Variable. You ignore them in that you don't interpret anything about them. In fact, there aren't any error terms to test them.
So then you would technically have like one big group in three different IQ levels.
You could do that. You could do two experiments. But again, why wouldn't you think that there might be an interaction between those two? And then, of course, like the whole thing is just such a nightmare to have two nuisance variables. There's a better way to do it. There must be a better way. And there is. I don't know why I did it like that. Put one nuisance variable in a row and like the other one in columns. Yeah. And then, it's not as exciting as I seem to think it is. Put the other one in columns! So put one in rows, one in columns, and then levels of the independent variable in the sort of cells, the intersections of those rows and those columns. Right? What you get, that was neat, is you get this. Okay, rows and columns, the 1, 2s, 3s, and 4s, those are different levels of a nuisance variable. And I'm sorry, this is the way it's done. These aren't different variables. These are different levels of your independent variable, A, B, C, and D. They aren't, there's no variable A, variable B, variable C, variable D. It's level 1, level A, level B, level C, level D. I did it like that because that's the way it's always done. I don't like it either.
So 1 to 4 is like different levels of that?
Of one nuisance variable. And 1 to 4 is levels of the other nuisance variable. Right? And then A, B, C, D are the four levels of the independent variable.
So that would be the different learning methods in the French example?
Different learning methods, A, B, C, and D. And different experiences with French and different IQ levels. Yeah. So the nuisance variables go in the rows and the columns. And what we're doing here is we're putting one subject in each cell. So one person who has 1 and 1 on both nuisance variables gets level A, or the first level. One person who has 2 and 3 gets level B, that's it. If we did this the other way and had actual blocks and they were crossed, what do we need here? We need 16 subjects. If we did this, we're crossed everything, we'd need 64 subjects, 4 by 4 by 4. So like I said, A, B, C, and D are levels of a factor. They are independent variables, okay? Each level occurs in each ordinal position. Note that A only occurs here once, and it occurs here once, and it occurs here once. It occurs here once. D is here, it's here, it's here, it's here. Each row, each column has each level once. Okay? And in fact, a person who did their honors thesis with me about 4 years ago used the Latin squares. And we had, instead of testing 64 people, we had 16 people. Because it was going to be impossible to find 64 people. It was going to be a nightmare, but she found 16 people. It was no problem. It was really a neat experiment, too. But identifying noxious odors that are masked by other things was very cool. Jen Sushrol is her name. And she was a great honor student. Had great edits with good group player. Not like the idiots I have this year. Oh, I'm sorry. Just playing. These are jokes. So, you need equal numbers of rows, columns, and independent variable levels. It's a restriction. You got to have like 4 levels of each, or 3, or 7, or what the hell you're doing. And the model is this. X equals mu plus alpha plus beta plus gamma plus epsilon. But so if any score equals the grand mean plus rows plus columns plus treatment, that's the one we're interested in, plus residual and error, what's left over. And these have kind of a special looking source of variation degrees of freedom table. It's a bit different. Now again, I know they do this all the time, and it's not my fault, but now, in this kind of design, it's rows, columns, independent variable. I know before alpha and beta were just variables. Now they're rows and columns of the 2 nuisance variables you have. So the analysis of variance looks like this. Rows, columns, independent variable, residual, total. There are P rows, P columns, and P levels of the independent variable. Okay? So, if the example that we had with 4, it's going to be 3, 3, 3, 6, which adds up to 15, and there were 16 observations, yay. Because P is 4, so it's going to be 3, and 3, and 3, and then P minus 1 times P minus 2, right? So that's going to be 3 times 2, 6. Total is always N minus 1. There's 16 observations in the example I just used there. That would be 15? What's that?
How do you know what P is?
P is the number of rows, and the number of columns, and the number of levels of independent variable. Yep.
Awesome.
It just always is.
Are they added together or independent?
I don't understand the question.
You said P is the number of rows, columns, and levels.
No, all of those, because they always have to be the same. Because it won't be a square. It's called Latin square, so it would be a Latin rectangle. Right, so it's rows, columns. So it's like 7. If it's 7, this would be 6, 6, 6, 30. 48, that would be right. This is 49 observations, 7 by 7. So one of the things, one of the important assumptions of this is you have to have an equal number of rows, columns, and levels of the independent variable. Good question. Other questions on this? Does this make sense? So remember, all we have here is two nuisance variables. That's all that's happened. And again, let's say you had 3 and 3 and 3. You might think, well, it wouldn't be hard to find 3 and 3 and 3. All you need, if it's a 3 by 3 by 3, you need 27 subjects. Yeah. And probably finding 3 people for each level, that is probably doable. 7 by 7, instead of needing 49 subjects for a Latin square, you're going to need 749, 7, that's 7 cubed. 28. So that's 98 times 3, so that's 297. 344 people. Yeah, no. 49 is easier. Yeah?
For every cell,
yeah,
it will be equal to, oh, it's just
one person.
Per cell.
One person.
Okay.
Yeah. You can do it. You can do it. It's a more advanced kind of design, but you can do it with 2 or 3 subjects per cell. That can be done. The other way you do this is instead of having 2 or 3 subjects per cell, you have 2 Latin squares beside each other, and then you have rows, columns, independent variable, residual, and then square. Because it's another source of variations which square you. Yeah, that was actually a question we had on a final exam in grad school, which was, how would you analyze this? We also had one that was incomplete. So it was a 4 by 3. Like, what do you do? That was great. You could also do a cube. No one does this. This is all theoretical. And you use rows and columns and then depth. Okay? And you do those with, so that's now 3 nuisance variables. That's called a Greco-Latin square, something like that. And you use Greek letters to go back this way, and then if you do 2 cubes, you use like Hebrew. I'm dead serious. No one does that. It's all just in the statistics literature. No one actually does a design like that. That's the point where you just go, you should probably think of another thing to do your thesis on. It's crazy. But these can be really useful, these designs. They really can be. Like I said, it'd be useful if you've got to meet the stringent assumptions, which is equal levels of rows, columns, so 2 nuisance variables, and independent variable. But that isn't as hard as it sounds. You can usually sort of figure that out. There can't be any interactions. You know, that model had rows, had grand mean in error, but rows, columns, and IV. It didn't say anything about interactions. There can't be any. Just like is the case with the randomized block design. You can't have interactions. So equal number of rows, columns, and IV. That's not as hard as it seems. This is probably the most stringent one, and you can never know. And you can't really even know with EDA, with exploratory data analysis. There's no real way you can know, because you don't have everything crossed with everything else. You couldn't draw a graph and say, well, what happens when level 2 occurs with level 1 and level 3? Oh, that never happens. So you just can't know. So that's a pain. Right. But these can be useful. And like I said, unlike the hierarchical designs, which I would say to avoid, I wouldn't avoid these. These are perfectly acceptable and perfectly useful designs. There's nothing wrong with these at all. Nothing wrong with these at all. You got questions about the Latin square?
Do we have to do one on the exam?
You might.
Like, actually do a Latin square?
Like, calculate it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Computers do that for you.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we might be given one, and I might ask you to do the source variation degrees of freedom table for it, but I mean, P minus 1, P minus 1, P minus 1, P minus 1 times P minus 2. It's not that hard. Right? And you'll know that it's like that because it'll say rows, columns, and independent variables instead of A, B, and A by B. You know, it's almost a gift giving you one of those. Yeah. If I need, like, go the other way, going from the SV table to the design, if it says rows and columns in it, yeah, well, that's, what else could it be? And like I said, these are, like, I have never seen a student do a thesis, for example, using hierarchical design. Doesn't happen. Last time I knew about it was my friend John did it in undergrad, and he didn't know he was doing it. And then one of his grads, like guys at the grad students, and I was like, whoa, you've got nested factors. He's like, I don't even know what that means. But I've seen a couple people at the time I've been here use Latin squares, and they're perfectly fine, and they're useful, and you know, there's nothing wrong with them. They can be real lifesavers if you have two useless variables. Real lifesavers. All right. We can stop a bit early today instead of doing three topics in one day. I think that's pretty good. We have like one more Alcivariance thing to get done, and we're done in Alcivariance. Oh, yeah. Pretty good. Thanks, guys.
I don't care anymore what you say about me. I don't hear you at all. I'm not feeling a thing. It's not real if all my memories erase. I don't think about us. As for my mental state, it's just an ordinary day.
Podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right, giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want. Okay. Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.